אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
You're with SBS Hebrew, and we are now joined by an Israeli woman living in Brisbane who tells us about her life as an Israeli citizen living in Australia pre and post October 7. Elinor Goffer is an exceptional woman who recounts moments of ostracization, but also of hope. Have a listen.
Elinor, welcome to SBS Hebrew.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Elinor, tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you first immigrate to Australia, and how have you found your experience being here so far?
I have immigrated to Australia 3.5 years ago. I can separate my experience to two blocks of experiences, before 7th of October and after 7th of October. Before 7th of October, I don't know if you know, but living in Israel is, it feels like you're always on alert. Like you're always very, very alert to your surrounding, alert to something that's going to happen. Everything has a lot of adrenaline. Everything is going on quick. And that's your experience as an Israeli. When we arrived to Australia, I felt that someone just pinched the balloon of stress that I was living in. And I felt all the stress was easing. And I felt like Australia was a true multicultural country, that everyone can get accepted. It doesn't matter where you're from. It was uplifting experience. I felt like I left all the stress, all the baggage that I came with, like at the airport. And I came here and everything just settled down. And it was a wonderful experience. But unfortunately, after the 7th of October, all those feelings rised again. Because unfortunately, I grew up on the Gaza border, so I was deeply impacted by what happened on the 7th of October events. While I was mourning and grieving, my whole body was mourning about what everything was happening. I went to the streets. The reactions I got like 2 days after, some of them were really good. A lot of people supported, but some of them were really bad. Like the coffee shop that I used to buy my coffee all the time called me a genocider, or tried to argue with me about what I'm experiencing, or to explain to me my feelings, to explain how am I supposed to feel. I've met with people who explained to me what is my origin and how am I supposed to feel about my origin? Like, where is my Jewish identity from? They explained to me where my Jewish identity from. Or they called me a white supremacist or a colonizer. And when I answered that I can't be a colonizer or a white supremacist because I'm Moroccan, so my parents were ethnically cleansed from Morocco. It was pretty funny to see their eyebrows go from until their head, because they've never met anyone who is not, he's Jewish and not from Europe. The ignorance was so heartbreaking to see how people have a lot of really strong opinions about a subject they don't have a clue about. You understood that underneath all those, I can only call it whitewashing of things, underneath all of this is this ancient hatred that is still alive and rises all the time. To understand it, to feel that hatred, was really bad. So of course, all the stress came back again. And you probably know how sometimes it feels uncomfortable speaking Hebrew on the streets, or tell your girls to be quiet, or getting onto an Uber and tell your girls, please don't say anything so we don't have an incident with the Uber driver and stuff like that. The whole experience of thinking that I could leave this baggage behind got me to the realization that we as Jewish people can never leave that baggage behind. It's something that goes with us everywhere we go. And we need to acknowledge it, and we need to understand it, and we need to be together and united. That's the only way we can conquer it. We can understand how to win or to overcome it. We need to be together. And that's why I felt that, first of all, we need to explain our perspective. We need to be united. I build a lot of bridges between the Israeli and Jewish community here. I felt that it needs to be connected more, because before that it wasn't connected at all. And a lot of beautiful women, mostly women, I don't know why it's mostly women, but a lot of beautiful women helped me and are doing it by themselves, and we are seeing more and more bridges and more unity in the community, which is beautiful. But still, there are a lot of things that are going on, and we need to show our faces. We need to explain. We need to show, just to share our perspective about it, because most of the panels that I'm going on, or when I speak, I'm like the first Israeli or the first Jewish people they've ever met. Because we're so tiny, people don't know us. So it's really easy to imagine this devil, or to imagine someone who just want to do bad in the world. And we need to show up and share our perspective. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I hope something sticks. I don't know. I can only hope.
And what's the reception been like when you have been speaking to people as an Israeli woman?
It really depends, because it depends how deep the wokeism is inherited in them. There are people that are really open and they are willing to listen. I don't mind when people are woke and have their own perspective. It's totally fine. I don't need to talk only to people that have my perspective. But as long as we can have a conversation, we can hold a conversation together, and we can argue and we can share a different perspective. That's how we grow. That's how we can do stuff together. But if people are too woke and have their shields up and they're not willing to listen or to talk about it, they just want to reject all those, I call it the woke dictionary, to call me the white supremacist, colonist, blah, blah, blah.
This subject has been brought up ever since Charlie Kirk's assassination a few weeks ago, the idea of constructive debate and how it can actually build bridges and build tolerance and sow in different perspectives from people on either side of the aisle, because it doesn't need to be so partisan and divided. And that's in a sharp contrast to cancel culture, which was really celebrated in 2020 and has continued since then, although it's probably slowing down. You know, ever since Donald Trump came back into power for his second term, that's kind of subsided. But it is very important to learn from each other and teach each other and to make you question your own stance on anything. And that's the whole point of living in a pluralistic society. But I wonder, how are you getting invited on panels, and what kind of places are you speaking to?
Most of the time people just invite me to panels, or they heard me speak somewhere and they wanted to share what I contribute to the conversation. I think the essence of Judaism is to argue. This is the essence. That's how we learn. That's how we grow as Jewish people.
And I found it quite interesting before how you said there were two different distinct, sorry to cut you off, but, and you can continue right after this, but there were two distinct different communities, the Israeli community and the Jewish community, and how they weren't necessarily that ingratiated with each other. Yeah.
First of all, there was a very tiny Israeli community. Now it gets bigger every day, unfortunately, because a lot of people are leaving Israel. But they just weren't connected. They didn't know about each other. They didn't do anything together. And it was unfortunate. If we want to overcome what's happening, we need to be united. We need to work together. And that's how we will grow as a society. Even, you know, one Jewish person have 10 different opinions. So that's how we get separated from one another. But we need to hold this argument together. We need to hold all the different perspectives in, even within ourselves. It's okay if I don't agree with you about something. I can talk to you about it and we can hold it together and we can grow from it. But if we are all on a constant battle with one another, we can never grow from it. We just be separated and separated. And Charlie Kirk just demonstrate how polarized society is. I really like the sentence that Jewish people represent the canary in the coal mine. We signal a bigger issue that's going on. So the polarization of society and how we can't even live with one another. We can't consume other people's opinions. It's wrong. It's very sad.
Let me ask you, as an Israeli woman, there was something that you mentioned earlier in the conversation. You clearly have an accent. People pick up on your accent. The natural next step is to ask where you're from. They ask you where you're from, and then what happens?
First of all, I stop and I try to understand if I'm safe or not. Most of the time, I'll say that I'm Israeli, and I'll get the reaction I'll get, and I'll know how to deal with it at the moment. I think 99% of the time, I would say that I'm from Israel and just wait for the wait for the reaction. 1% of the time, I don't say if I feel really, really unsafe. I won't say where I'm from. But I know of a lot of people that won't say they're from. I can give you an example. Like, I have a very good friend. She just enrolled her kid here in Brisbane, in Queensland. Our kids go to public schools. We do have a Jewish elementary school, but it's far away. So most of the people are integrated. It's not, we don't have like Jewish neighborhoods and stuff like that. Everyone is spread around. To your point before about the Israeli and Jewish community. So we don't have like a certain place that everyone lives together. So it's harder to get to know one another. That's how you need to actually do it, to build those bridges. My friend just got her daughter into a public school, and it was the new year, and she got a new friend. The friend told my friend's daughter that she's not allowed for a play date because her mother said she won't get her to play with an Israeli. She doesn't want to talk to the mother because she's Israeli. Yeah, we have a lot of situations like that. It's tiny. It all accumulates to one bigger issues, but we have a lot of instances.
That is classic racism 101. Do you think that the people that are saying these sorts of things know that they're being racist or bigoted? No. Or do you think that they're doing it from...
They think they are the right side of history. They don't know that they're racist. Sometimes you need to call it out or to ignore it. I have another friend. She ignored it. I told her just at a response, send her love. Tell your kids to tell you to tell her friend that she's sending a lot of love, and if she wants, you will be welcome to her house and whatever. Just sometimes it depends. Sometimes you wanna overcome the fire with water and not to create another fire, and then it will.
But the temptation is there to go both ways. I mean, the temptation's very much there to shut someone down and call them racist. But mm-hmm. then you're but also
on,
just going
to... On what years are you falling? Like, on what are you... Who would listen to the fact that you're racist? She would say, you're causing a genocide and I don't want to talk to you. Stuff like that.
And like, you're probably just reinforcing her point of view. If you tell her off and you double down on that, and then you call her a racist when she's calling you a racist, then you just keep reinforcing the same points that you think about each other originally. So there's no growth from that.
I think that the key is to be subtle, is to show them. A lot of times I take their dictionary and I turn it around against. It's not really against them. It's just showing them that their core beliefs can be twisted to the other side. Like, if they're calling me, I don't know, a colonizer, I can answer that I am indigenous of the land of Israel. Like, I can incorporate a lot of stuff of what they're thinking, of what they're talking about. But on the other side, you don't have to call it out precisely. You can share an experience from a different perspective, and then they hear you like, huh, that's interesting. That's what I do a lot with the kids when I go to panels in schools. To your question before, I volunteer in an organization called Together for Humanity. So we go as a panel. I'm the Jewish representative. It's not only me. We have more people. So it's Jewish representative, Muslim, Christian, Torres Strait Islander, or a refugee. We go together as a panel and we give the kids the opportunity to ask us any question they want without PC. So I think because I talked to the panel so much, so the answers didn't even came from me. Two of the panel members told the kids that when you are pro something, it means that you are against something else. You need to be mindful not to be against something else. You can be a pro for anything, but see that you're not against someone. I think I gave them that idea in their mind, and they said it didn't even come from me. So it was so beautiful to see that the things that you project, that you really care and you love most people. You don't want to hate anyone. I don't want to hate anyone, and I don't want anything bad to happen to anyone else. And I care for the Muslim that is with me. I care for the Christian that is with me. I care for all the panel, and they feel it. So they project the same for me. And that's how you showcase tolerance. And that's how you showcase how we can create an argument, how we can argue with ourselves, but you showcase how you do it in a proper and respectful manner. And you can say anything. Mm. It's really funny to see the kids when the refugee said, why? Because I'm black. So the kids are like, oh my God, he said black. Or the Muslim next to me said, you can ask me anything. You can ask me if all Muslims are suicide bombers. And you see the kids like, oh my God, what did you say? But
yeah,
you can hold this discussion. You can ask those questions. You can say all your prejudice ideas or stuff like that. They asked me if all Jewish people are, if we control the world, if we control the media or stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great initiative. I think it's a really good way to just break the barriers between, you know, what people think and what people mm-hmm. really want to have a conversation about. That's also, there's a stark contrast to the situation that you mentioned with the young girl going to school with your friend's daughter. And you were earlier telling me about when you moved to Australia with your husband after October 7. Tell us about his situation and how his line of work responded to October 7 with him.
I really want to share that there are a lot of rays of light. And his experience in the hospital, all the people there were very, very kind, and they sent us a lot of food to our house. My husband is a pediatrician. He works in the hospital here, and he works in the ED, the place that he really loves, and and it's beautiful. We came here because of his fellowship, and while October 7th happened, most, I think all of them were really, really kind to them. Some of them had really weird questions, like, I thought the war was between... was between the US and Israel or stuff like that. It was really weird. But it's just ignorance. But most of them, they sent us food and they came to visit us and they hugged us and supported us. And it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. We got a lot of support from a lot of people. You can have it both ways. It depends. People can be really kind. A lot of people, when I say from Israel, they can hug me or cry. I had those responses as well. Like, oh my God, you're Israeli. I'm not praying enough for you or stuff like that. Like, okay, you're good. You don't need to cry. You're praying enough. Don't worry. Or you can have people who are asking me, how does it feel to be a genocider? It depends. That's why every time people ask me where I'm from, I pause for a second and I like prepare my body for their reaction. And I try to understand how to react properly. It depends on the person. You can never know. You can never know.
Before we wrap up, can you please tell us what we can do as a Jewish community to try and improve the situation, at least in our little patch of land here in Australia?
Two things. One is, don't be controlled by your ego. Set your ego aside. Set your differences aside. We need to be together, all Jewish people. We need to be together. It's really important for me. Where there's ego, there's no light of the creator. This is a sentence that I'm taking with me all the time. Set it aside. See the bigger picture. We need to be united and we need to be together. That's the first thing. The second thing is to show up. Show up for our friends, show up for our family, show up for everyone here in Australia and tell our truth. Share our stories. Don't be afraid. Nothing will happen. I can assure that, but have a faith that nothing will happen. We are so tiny and we need to share our perspective. We need to share our story. It's really, really important because a lot of people don't know. We share it within ourselves, but a lot of people don't know and they're really interested in knowing. So if you share your story and you share your concerns and share your beliefs and share the beauty of being Israeli or Jewish or whatever, just be kind and share our kindness. This is good enough. That's what I think.
Elinor, thank you so much for joining us here on SBS Hebrew.
Thank you.
רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להאזין לפודקאסטים.